This podcast is sponsored by Talkspace.
Last year, I went through many different life changes. I needed to take a pause and examine how I was feeling in the inside to better show up for the ones who need me to be my best version of myself.
When you're navigating life's changes, Talkspace can help. Talkspace is the number one rated online therapy, bringing you professional support from licensed therapists and psychiatry providers that you can access anytime, anywhere.
Living a busy life, navigating a long-distance relationship, becoming a first-step father, Talkspace made all of those journeys possible. I could speak with my therapist in the office. I could speak with my therapist in the comfort of my home. I was never alone.
Talkspace works with most major insurers, and most insured members have a $0 copay. No insurance, no problem. Now get $80 off your first month with promo code SPACE80 when you go to Talkspace.com. Match with a licensed therapist today at Talkspace.com. Save $80 with code SPACE80 at Talkspace.com.
Planet Fitness has everything you need to start strong, so you can give everything you've got. From plate-loaded strength equipment and functional training areas to treadmills, stair climbers, and free weights. Our equipment is best in class, and our clubs are right around the corner, so you can make this your strongest year yet. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, January 9th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.
Hi, Shelly R. Warren.
Hi.
Hi. Welcome to Shift Talking.
We kind of know each other now because, okay, so can I get the backstory?
Yes, please. Okay. Yes, please.
So if you live in Tennessee, good news. Our taxes are now, we don't have to file until November 3. And the reason why is because we're in tornado season and it's been screwing up our whole state. And so we actually did, what, maybe like 30% of this interview last week. And then my electricity went out. So that's why you're like, they seem real comfortable with each other. We are real comfortable with each other because we talked for 30 minutes and the electricity went out.
I would really love for us to go right into just like good advice for people. And just like marriage in general, what you do and when you find people, like when they find you rather.
Okay.
How they find you, what you think is like one of the first steps for them to rewrite their marriages, rewrite their relationships with themselves too. And just like, where do people typically find you? Are they on the midst of a near separation?
Mm, okay.
Like, how do you know when to start?
Where they find me, but where?
Oh, no, sorry.
Oh, yes. Look here. People always come to counselors, coaches, therapists when half their house is burned down. Yeah. And it's really unfair to us, to be honest. Because it's like, we burned down our house, now fix our house.
Mm-hmm.
What I recommend couples do is you should treat your marriage like an oil change. It is a journey. So maybe not every 3 months. Some of my clients actually do see me like 4 times a year. After we work through whatever our issue is, then I see them 4 times a year. But I recommend any couple and every couple at least once or twice a year have someone take your temperature. Because sometimes you think things are fine and they aren't fine, or one of you's well and the other one's not, or neither one of you know how to articulate what's really going on. Okay. So that would be the first thing. Because my niche is reconciling divorces and I promote that, then a lot of people do come to me when they're almost on their way out of their marriage. And something that I do live by is, if you don't feel like you love each other anymore, I'm not worried about that. We can get back to love. Sometimes feelings of love ebb and flow. But if you don't like each other anymore, now we're in trouble.
Yeah.
And it's interesting because I think it's wild that people are still debating, should you be friends with your spouse or even elevate your friend to best friend? And I am a writer before a coach. So I'm word definition specific. I know what best means. I don't really know. Like, I personally demote myself when my friends get married. Even if we are best friends, we're now good friends. because I don't know how I'm the most desirable, the most advantageous, the most suitable to you, and you got a whole spouse right here, yeah. right? But if you two are friends and you really like each other, you can make it. Whatever it is, too. A good example, they weren't clients of mine, but really close friends. And when you do my work, you're kind of counseling everybody, sometimes for free, right? Mm-hmm. Two of my friends got married. They've been married about 20 years now, both virgins when they got married, both of them.
Hi-o.
Maybe halfway in, the husband cheated multiple times. Mm-hmm. He was a musician. And because of the work I do, I like to unpack why. We stay very surface. They just cheated. But I like to be like, no.
Yeah.
I remember when he lived here, he didn't get a lot of female attention. He wasn't seen as very attractive. Now you're doing international tours with famous artists. You're getting more attention you've ever gotten. I actually get it. I don't justify it, but I understand it.
Yeah.
But the thing that I love about this couple, because they survived it, is they were best friends before they became a couple. And when I asked the wife, because the way it came out to us is one day he did a Facebook post. Like, it went from knowing nothing to he did a Facebook post. And he was telling us he had burner phones and he had cheated on her.
Wow.
He wanted to take accountability for it. So when I talked to her, I was like, how you doing? And she said, well, I'm not embarrassed. I kept my vows. Like, I'm good. Mm-hmm. Which, good for her, right?
100%.
But she said the first thing that came to her mind was not, I'm going to leave him. They have children. It wasn't, I'm going to leave him. And she was like, what's wrong with my friend? Like, this is so out of character for my friend. And they survived it. And they're better than they've ever been. So that's my first tip. Like, really, y'all, don't underestimate friendship, for sure. Mm-hmm. You have a 33% greater chance of surviving your marriage if you've had, let me add this, thorough premarital counseling. Not you went to see somebody for two sessions for 30 minutes. I'm talking to church and unchurched folk. Most people's premarital counseling sucks.
Yeah.
Sucks. And it sucks because, so I have this theory, right?
Yeah.
I think there should be premarital counseling before engagement. Because once you have the ring on and you set a date, you're not really listening to anything. You're going to get married anyway, 9 times out of 10.
Yeah.
Premarital counseling really should we get married? And then I think there should be engagement counseling. And engagement counseling would be, let's budget for the wedding, because almost 40% of people go into immediate debt with that doggone wedding ceremony.
Yep.
And then let's navigate through our first 2 years as newlyweds.
Well, and it's also even like the stress of planning.
100%. 100%.
The in-laws, who comes, who has an opinion, who says what. It's, yes. I think
learning how to negotiate. Because you're negotiating in ways you never have before.
Yeah.
And then your newlywed years, if you did not live together prior to marriage, and it's still interesting. Statistics still say if you live together before marriage, your divorce rate goes up, which is still interesting to me. I'm still unpacking that. But if you haven't lived together before, I'm telling you, I tell people all the time, it's not the big stuff that makes you be like, I'm finna be up out of here. It's if I got white pee off this seat one more time. If you don't wash this dish out this sink one more time. If you don't pick this wet towel off this one more time.
It's my husband, little stuff. Yeah, he used to make this noise when he would brush his tongue when he was brushing his teeth in the morning. And I was like, I swear to fucking God. More times, my goodness. Like, it's such a slow drip.
It is.
But people just put a bucket under it until the whole pipe explodes.
Look.
And then shit just gets wild. So it does. Completely agree with you. It's all prevention, right?
And, but like, and we need to know how to do these things. How hard it can be. I think there's nothing more beautiful than marital intimacy for billions of reasons, okay? Mm-hmm. But I also think what's not discussed enough is how challenging it can be to want to have sex with someone you live with when you know how they live. When you're dating, we're going to put the lingerie on and he's going to clean up his bedroom. Okay.
Yeah.
When I'm washing your underwear for you. Okay. Yeah. When you see the crust and stuff in my eyes, we don't talk about that. I love you. I love sex with you, but I've got to adjust to knowing you in the way that I now know you and still find you sexy. There's so much we don't talk about childhood. One of my favorite quotes, adulthood is surviving childhood. It shouldn't be that way, but it's the truth. 100%. And if you put two trauma bonds, a lot of people aren't in love. I don't even like really the term in love. I like love because I like that Albert Einstein quote, gravity is not why people fall in love. You know, I just like love because it sounds like a choice in love. Like I fell in love with you.
Yeah.
Then fall out of love with you. Right. Yeah. But a lot of people did not maturely choose each other. I'm a big quotes person because I'm a writer. One of my favorite quotes, we all choose demons that play well with our own.
Damn. Yes.
We're trauma bonded. We're not in love or love. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And we don't realize that until the two kids. There was an exercise I saw on Instagram and I implemented with one of my clients. It's a couple and they keep a picture of both of them from when they were 7. It's like a 5x7 and they keep it in their bedroom. Mm-hmm. And when certain triggers go off, they're like, is it you or is it the 7-year-old?
Mm. That's so good. And also, like, when I'm talking to you, which one am I going to show
100%
grace to? Right? 100%. Like, my younger son looks just like my husband. That when he was born, my mom was like, good thing you like your husband. Because if you didn't, you'd be staring at him all the fucking time. And so whenever I'm talking to my younger, because he looks just like him and he acts like him, there's almost like this part that like reminds me to speak to my son in a way that I wish my husband was spoken to. Mm-hmm. And also allows for me to talk to my husband in a way I would have wanted him to be spoken to back then, but obviously, and like, I still want to fuck you afterward.
Right.
You know, but like, it is. And I love what you said about friendship too, because I can't imagine not being friends with somebody first. My husband and I were friends for years. We were in the same friends group. Mm. Like, I hooked him up with a girlfriend of mine. It's just like all of this stuff before he and I even got together. That once we did, it just like made sense. And we were literally together like one night to the next. He like professed his love to me. And I was like, dude, me too. And then we were just together. And there was that part that now I think a lot of people are afraid of starting their relationship with a friendship because they're like, well, I don't want to be glorified roommates and just be friends. It's like, well, if you have that root to begin with, the sex can always come once you're working on the intimacy.
The purpose of marriage.
That's fair.
So it's like, or friendship, because I live in the South, grew up Christian, went to Christian schools until college, and especially among my white brethren, they get married really quick, really quick. It's very common.
This podcast is sponsored by Talkspace.
Last year, I went through many different life changes. I needed to take a pause and examine how I was feeling in the inside to better show up for the ones who need me to be my best version of myself.
When you're navigating life's changes, Talkspace can help. Talkspace is the number one rated online therapy, bringing you professional support from licensed therapists and psychiatry providers that you can access anytime, anywhere.
Living a busy life, navigating a long-distance relationship, becoming a first-step father, Talkspace made all of those journeys possible. I could speak with my therapist in the office. I could speak with my therapist in the comfort of my home. I was never alone.
Talkspace works with most major insurers, and most insured members have a $0 copay. No insurance, no problem. Now get $80 off your first month with promo code SPACE80 when you go to Talkspace.com. Match with a licensed therapist today at Talkspace.com. Save $80 with code SPACE80 at Talkspace.com.
There used to be this saying that it's like white girls go to college to get a husband, black girls go to college to get an education. And there's pros and cons to both of those, to be honest. But if you're rushing when your brain isn't even, like, a 17-year-old trying to process picking a spot. Look.
I know.
So you're not even understanding the value of marriage, let alone the value of friendship with your partner if you're 20. You just don't. And we're not promoting that well with our kids either. Like, I don't have children, but I've got children. mm-hmm. that are very much my children. Like, I took out life insurance on those buddies. And one's 13 and one's 6. And even now, she's like my boyfriend. I'm like, your friend. No, Aunt Shelley, no, your friend.
Yeah.
Your friend. Because if you're already, like, you're going through all this heartbreak and drama and trauma 15 times before you even get to the age where you're ready to get married, you don't even really respect marriage well because you've been playing marriage all that time. Be friends. Like, I'm all for crushes. Go out. But why can't everybody go out? You know, hang out. Just hang out with your friend. Yeah. The best thing in my life right now are my guy friends. Love them. Love them. The yeah. way it balances my energy. Girls
different perspectives.
Girls yeah. often tell you what you want to hear. Guys are going to tell you what you need to hear. Girls would be like, oh, he hasn't called you in a week because he's really trying to figure out. Guys would be like, he's not interested in you. That's why he didn't call you. Oh, I love friendship. Another tip would be, if you're, it's a play on words, but I definitely think you'll get it. Your partner should improve you, not change you. As a result of being with them, yes, you need to pick someone that does hold you accountable. I say often to my clients, your closest accountability partner should be your spouse. So if you can't trust them to hold you accountable, you've picked the wrong person. But they shouldn't be manipulating you, changing you. I wish you were this. Why'd you pick me if you're trying to change everything about me? Being in your presence should make me feel safe enough that I'm improving as a result of us knowing each other and your accountability. Mm-hmm. But I'm not walking on eggshells in your space.
Yeah, that's where I think you kind of went back to that full circle of like why people choose partners.
Yes.
What we hear often, the wives I work with oftentimes say, he wants a wife, but he doesn't want to be a husband.
Mm-hmm.
And so much of it is because, yeah, like we take on these, for the most part, we take on like more of a mothering role. We do their laundry. We cook for them. We clean for them. We blow them. We do all of these mm-hmm. things, right? Not motherly in that part, but like we still are like doing everything for them. And then whatever we get later is like, okay, thanks. Like, thank you so much. We really appreciate you. So or then we're surprised when
that. There's a lot of women want to be brides and not wives.
100%.
You don't have a clue what you want to do after your wedding day. That's all you really thought
about.
Well,
and it's all about how I'm benefiting from you.
What I can get.
Exactly. So then of course it's going to turn into control. Of course it's going to turn into not liking each other. And then it becomes about sex.
I remember reading a book and the author said, the reason why weddings go off with a hit, without a hitch is because they plan those. Y'all don't plan weddings. You plan the napkins. You plan the music. You plan the salmon. You got it down to a T. And then it's like after your honeymoon, no idea what you're going to do. And you're just fumbling around with each other.
Well, because it's not a marriage, right? Like it's so similar. We did the same shit. Right. Like my husband and I, we budgeted, we knew we didn't want a crazy big wedding, whatever this was, but we would we would be in active arguments while doing our DIY cups that we did out of old wine bottles that we drank and we like cut them and like did the whole deal ourselves. And in the middle of that, it's like, we're arguing, we're like going back and like, do you like it like this or like this? Like, okay, good. But like, we're fucking fighting about the wedding that's supposed to be in celebration of our marriage. Well, we're not actually trying to work through the marriage.
What were you actually fighting about though? When the wedding, what was really
fucking everything else, but it's all disguised. But there's that like after the wedding we felt more secure, like, oh, this is over. This is like, we're here, we're embedded, like we're here together. And then of course, just, you know, shit show. Cause we didn't know ourselves. We were 23 when we got together, crazy young. So there's that part. And then, yeah, like we felt very much at home with each other because we were really good friends from the get. And then we see a lot of these other relationships where once the wedding's over, it's like, fuck. Now what? What do I have to look forward to show off my relationship? Let me go to social media. Let me do this. And it's like, we're miserable because we're not working on it.
Ring alone. Do you know the origin story of the engagement ring?
Remind me. I've heard this. I couldn't repeat it.
De Beers? Okay.
No.
So De Beers was going broke. There was no diamond engagement ring until the 1930s.
Stop.
And they can't, like, Google how an ad invented the engagement ring. The Atlantic did a great story on it. But De Beers was going broke. They came out with a diamond is forever, and people have been sheep ever since. It has nothing to do with love. It was a great marketing campaign, and y'all have been funding the mess out of it.
Well, and I mean, it is at that point. Like, when I had so many friends growing up that were like, oh, it needs to be 3 carats, 2 carat, whatever, cushion cut, whatever. Nothing about who's actually going to, like, put it on your finger.
I mean,
nothing about what comes after that.
Yeah. And I'm actually very, I don't really look. Let me reframe it. I'm actually pro upgrading rings over time. Mm-hmm. I think wedding bands, get a really nice wedding band. It's fabulous. I'm not talking anybody out of getting their diamond ring, but I am far more moved by the upgrade. We went 10 years. I'm going to upgrade the ring. She had my babies. I'm going to upgrade the ring. We're not trying to kill each other. I'm going to upgrade the ring. Those mean something to me. I don't really know what you did. And I have family in Africa. And so, like, my brother still had to pay a dowry for his wife. Like, those things are still very real in certain parts of the culture. I mean, a part of the world. Yeah. But that dowry comes with something. Like, it's negotiating with family, and they're discussing what my brother's going to do for her and what she's going to do for him. We're not doing that over here. We're just putting a big old ring on your finger, and it's a crapshoot what you're going to get or she's going to get.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, so can we pause on that for a second? Because I think that that's such an interesting point to make, because that's a collectivist culture.
Yeah.
Right. Like, that, all of that is that our families are merging into one larger family. And here it's so individualistic that the vast majority of people I'm working with, it's in-law shit. Mm. It's wife in-law came in, told wife came in, told husband how his relationship with his sisters, with his brothers, with his family, his parents, whatever is going to look like, or vice versa. And then if anyone has an opinion before the marriage, before the wedding, whatever, the commitment, then it's a conflict. Instead of, hey, this is where we're concerned, here's where we are. Like, we don't welcome other people into the parts of our relationship to talk about compatibility and how to best get along and all of that. And it's wild. It's wild. And I'm not immune to that either. Yeah.
We could talk all day about that, though. Like, the East is very different than the West. You know, yeah. So I'll leave that there. But, like, even the family dynamics here are so different. Daughters aren't even in a relationship, a lot of them, with their dad, for the dad to talk to the intended husband about some stuff mom might not even think to ask about. Mm-hmm. You know, or there's a lot of, y'all want to talk about son husbands? Because they're real. So there is a lot of women that are jealous because their son is getting a new person in their life.
Yes.
So there's these breakdowns of family dynamics before the person even comes to enter into the family. Mm-hmm. Which is why I'm very big on people that come to me for premarital counseling, they know we're going to be on intimacy for a long time and childhood for a long time.
Last time you said you guys talk like 3-6 months just on intimacy, yes, right?
100%, that's what you said? Because the more you answer questions determines how much more. Like, I remember having this couple. And they were one of the couples that God used me to help them reconcile into getting married again. They were divorced. We did counseling. They remarried. Mm-hmm. And then we were in counseling for about a year and a half. And when I feel like, so let me say this to people too. When you go to a therapist, a coach, a counselor for a particular issue, it should only take a year and a half at the most. People should know that. And then it's kind of like we take the training wheels off and you should be able to ride. Mm-hmm. So if you're with somebody for years and years and years, because remember, this is a business. We do make money. So I'm just doing you a solid. If you're with someone for years and years and years, number one, please be able to document to yourself how they're benefiting you. Like, you can say this. But really, issues should be shifting within that time. Like, a year and a half, you should be talking about something else. Working on something else. If you're with somebody for 5-6 years about the same thing, It's kind of codependent.
It's chronic.
Yeah, like it's not healthy.
Yeah, they become a sounding board. And that's where I have this anecdotal timeline of 1 month for every year that you've been together is how much your marriage needs or your relationship needs.
Okay.
And that it's like, it's 1 month or 1 month for every year until it starts to feel more automatic.
Got it.
But like, if you've been together a year and you can give me 30 days where you can guarantee that the betterment of your relationship is top of mind, that's what you're going to focus on. You're going to work on connecting your emotional intimacy, you know, all of this kind of stuff. I can guarantee you by the end of those 30 days, that it will start to feel more automatic.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I attribute 1 month to every year.
So going back to the couple, part of the reason why I stay on intimacy so long is when it's time to do exit interviews, I will cover like anything y'all need to say financially, anything y'all need to say emotionally, anything you need to say spiritually, mm-hmm. anything you need to say sexually. And she said, I was so pissed too because I was ready to be done with them.
Planet Fitness has everything you need to start strong so you can give everything you've got. From plate-loaded strength equipment and functional training areas to treadmills, stair climbers, and free weights. Our equipment is best in class, and our clubs are right around the corner, so you can make this your strongest year yet. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, January 9th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.
She said, just one thing. Everything was like, yeah, we're good.
Uh-huh.
She said, I'm tired of using spit to make myself wet. Okay.
Goddamn.
So now we're back in for another 6 months.
Yes. Because
we were unpacking foreplay issues and sexual selfishness and his appetite is higher than hers and how long she's been faking orgasms. And
oh my God.
From that one statement.
Yeah. That's so, just one small thing.
Huge.
Yeah.
Like you can't. There was this couple on Huffington Post. I promise you, I wish I could find it. It was an old lady. I can't remember if they had been married 60 years or 70 years, but they made the news because they've been married so long, right?
Yeah.
And they were trying to be, the interviewer was trying to be all deep. So what is the secret? Here goes the wife. I fuck him. I don't fuck the rest of my friends. We don't even talk about like, one client I had, she hadn't slept with her husband in 2 years and then he cheated. And then she won't act like he was the only problematic person in the relationship. Who signed up for 2 years of abstinence in a marriage? Who's doing that?
Well, and I think that there's a lot there because it's like, there's so much more than just not having sex with him for 2 years. Like, what is she missing? Where are we not connecting? Right. So I do agree that it does turn into this like, well, you didn't do that, so he found someone else too. Okay. And what the fuck were you doing that she didn't want to have sex with you for two years?
Now I feel like you're learning me. Why is my face looking like this?
Because you agree?
No.
You disagree?
I feel like we're automatically wired to do sisterhood. It may not have been anything about what he was doing, just what is going on with her. Mm. And the truth is, that was what it was. What was going on with her? We're always magically wired. Like, what did you do wrong? It's not always what the guy did wrong. Her issues were, she had always kind of weaponized sex as a single person. Mm-hmm. It was a power trip. It made her feel good to be wanted. When sex became a responsibility, because it is, we don't want to talk about that, but in marriage it is. It's a staple. It's foundational. It's necessary. She wasn't prepared for that. So she would just prefer, well, let's just live together. Nobody signed up for that.
Yeah.
That's two examples of why I'm like, no. And not just sex intimacy, but intimacy. Like, did you see your parents kiss? What is your sexual love language? Like love languages, and then there's sex love languages. Like, do you prefer to be touched sexually? Do you prefer dirty talk? Like, there's so many angles to this thing.
Yes.
Instead of like, did you learn about sex from porn? Because if you learned about sex from porn, your expectations are going to be very different than someone who did not.
Right.
Those are the kind of things we like to talk about.
Yeah. And that's where, you know, it's, there's certain things that when my husband and I go through longer periods of time that we're not having sex, we are now at this point, we're talking about it.
Yeah. Right? Yeah. Good.
There's something that's going on. But when I was postpartum with my second and I was just not myself and I was really struggling, it was like a good year and a half where like, I didn't realize how much I was suffering. He kept just trying to get close to me. And because I wasn't very comfortable with any sort of physical touch because I was afraid that it was going to turn into sexual touch and that I was going to have to say no.
No.
That then I would pull away. And then, of course, each time I do lean in when he tries to give me love or touch, then, of course, he does try to have sex with me because I haven't shown, I haven't been receptive, right? So, like, we were having sex, of course, during that year and a half. It just wasn't, I wasn't there for it. It wasn't for me, right?
And so even that, I say, like, so that's okay, I love in Jewish culture, I think they pronounce it mikveh, but it's M-I-K-V-E-H.
Mikveh.
And what Christians would think is baptism, it's water immersion that they do, but they do it for different seasons, right? I love that. Mm-hmm. Get married, get in the water, come up a different person. Have a baby, get in the water, come up a different person. There should be counseling too when people get pregnant to prepare you because it's a whole new season you're entering in.
Yeah.
And so it's like, imagine, I mean, you get it, but any man that's listening to this, just imagine you're a little girl, you had no breasts. Then you go into puberty and you get breasts. Then you start a period, you got to adjust to them growing, hurting, then you start becoming sexually active and you're sharing your breasts. And P.S., breasts aren't an erogenous zone for everybody.
Right.
So sometimes you're sharing it for you, but it's not really doing anything for me. Don't assume every woman wants that, right?
Right.
Then you get pregnant and it was like, well, first they were mine and then they were ours and now they're my babies. And then you still want to be on them. I got to shift from like feeding to sex, it feels creepy because I don't have my body right now. There's so much stuff that needs
they're to not happen. Even mine, right? Like around that time when I told him, because it was just happening sparingly, I told him, like, if you need sex, I understand this. I am not equipped to give that to you. We can coordinate something, right? Like I offered him. I was like, we were living in Las Vegas at the time. Not that that matters, but there was that I was like, we can coordinate something. Like, if this is something that you're really needing and I am just not equipped to give it to you, we can work this out. And he was like, what the fuck?
What are you talking about?
What are you talking about? Like, it's not just about sex. It's about sex with you. And I was like, right. But like, I don't want to have sex with me. I don't want to have sex with you. I am just not here.
I want to think about it.
Nothing. My body is not mine. Not mine. Before, yes, I used to share it with you. And now you expect me to go from breastfeeding our baby to then you being on there and have me enjoy it. Like, it's just, and I know
some
you want me to enjoy it.
Some women can. Right?
I cannot. It did not work for me. And so there are so many of these conversations that people don't have for years and years and years. And I don't know if you see this too. I'd imagine you do. What I tend to see by the time people come to me, because it is tail end of an ultimatum for the most part, right? Mm-hmm. There's some level of something going to shit. There's that part that it's like, well, if we work on this little piece, this other piece is going to surface. And then I don't know how to forgive them for that piece. And I don't even know how to talk about that piece. And then it becomes this whole like, just fuck it, leave that one and let's just move on to the next relationship. But it's because there's so much overwhelm. There's so much shit that we're not addressing before we commit, after we commit, before we get married, after we get married, before we have kids, once we have kids. There's so many of these different parts that nobody's talking about. We're morphing over and over and over again. And yet we're surprised when we don't know each other because both of us have changed so many times and I have no fucking clue.
One of my favorite quotes too is people change and forget to tell each other. Great quote.
Oh my God. Yes.
But honestly, one of the things that you would benefit, not you specifically in general, benefit your children is teach them integrity. I'm really like getting tired of people treat like marriage isn't like your boyfriend, girlfriend. Marriage isn't like your engagement partner. It's not. But we're dating like we're married, so we don't value marriage as something greater than that.
Right.
So if children don't know how to keep a promise, married people are sure not going to know how to keep a promise. And sometimes, I remember interviewing an atheist couple here, and I adored what they said. Because here's what's wild. Christians divorce, when you're looking at like a religion chart, 70% is Christian. Wow. 70 freaking percent. You know who's low? Muslims, Hindu faith, atheists. Mm-hmm. Atheists are like on the bottom. And I was interviewing a couple of atheist couple, and they said, we don't need to believe in God to keep our word. We made a promise. We're just going to keep our word. But wow. That's even something that's not taught as a child. Like if you said you're going to do something, you should do it. And if I told you I was going to do something for you as a parent, I should do it.
Yeah.
So we emotionalize marriage too. It's like, well, I wanted to be this romantic Disney movie. It's not. I'll go find someone else to make it a romantic Disney movie. It's not. It's not ever going to be a Disney movie.
Yeah.
It's not.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like, go ahead.
No, please. I'm listening.
You've just got to figure out okay. I'm good for boycotting weddings too. I don't go unless I'm in agreement with what's going on. Like you all do what you want, but if I can't say, I think this is awesome, I'm not going.
I'm notorious
for people know it. They'll be like, Shell, I'm getting married. And the first thing I say is why? It's not congrats or anything. It's why? And if people start down the rabbit hole, I mean, what do you mean why? I mean, I'm 34. What do you mean why? When I hear answers like, one of my favorite answers was, I feel like I've gone as far as I should go alone. I think we go together for this. Because it sounds like you're whole, you're healthy, you're picking someone whole and healthy. It's not needy. I like that people need each other, but I don't like needy.
Yeah.
I'm not needy for you. I just think you're great for this new season of my life. You will fit that. You will compliment me. Great. But you often hear my biological clock is ticking. I'm tired of being alone. Whatever, you know, it's always these broken dynamic reasons.
It's a checkbox.
It is.
Yeah.
And it takes very mature people to be married.
Well, and, you know, there is that like I was, you know, just a lot of emotional not coaching up when I was growing up. Right. Like loving family, super supportive. And of course, the ways that we were and just not very emotionally intelligent in helping me understand what I'm feeling, what to do with it, how to carry it, how to move through it. Like that kind of stuff was lacking for me. And so I was deeply codependent. And while, yes, my husband and I were really good friends, we also were just like thin fucking separable, which is of course a really great thing. Yes. And it's like, I forgot how to like just be with my-
Planet Fitness has everything you need to start strong, so you can give everything you've got. From plate-loaded strength equipment and functional training areas to treadmills, stair climbers, and free weights. Our equipment is best in class, and our clubs are right around the corner, so you can make this your strongest year yet. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, January 9th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.
Girlfriend without feeling ever that I need to go back home with him. You know, like there was just so much of that shit that I just like, didn't know how to do. And then of course we got married and everything changed. And I think I shared with you that we had a crisis 4 years ago and we rewrote our marriage, right? Like we neared separation. We were talking very seriously about it and co-parenting the whole deal, when we would introduce new partners to our kids, how we would kind of go through this whole process. We were being very mature about it. And then we were like, well, we're just going to like work through this shit with another partner. You're my dude. I love you. Like, do we want, like, can we rewrite this? Can we just not save this marriage? I don't fucking want that one. Like, that one did not work for me in the long term. I want a new marriage with you and do you. And we both were just like, yes, it's three fucking right.
Excellent.
So we were able to do that at that point. And yes, like I we got married because it was just the next step. We moved in together and then married. And then we got pregnant a month or two after our wedding. That's what we do, right?
Did you grieve that, though? That there wasn't enough time? And you're a little muffled for some reason. That there wasn't enough time? Another author I read said, this is an opinion, but I do like the analogy, right? He said your marriage should be in first grade before you have kids, so you're not raising twins. I like the analogy from the perspective of marriage is a baby, babies are babies. Like my godchildren's parents, they're divorced now, but when they got married, they had two wedding dates. So they got legally married in July. They had their wedding in October. She got pregnant in between. But didn't know it. And so on her wedding day, she was sick as a dog. And now here's my goddaughter. But one of the things she does say in reflection is a part of what played a role in our divorce is we just didn't have time to be married. We were then had to focus on her. But we were realizing we were missing steps with each other. So what's your experience with that? Like, how do you feel about
that? Very much so. Right. Like we were together, friends. We got together quickly. We moved across country for my master's program. We had that at the end of my master's program. He proposed. And then we moved back to Vegas. We just got jobs in between. Mm. We planned a wedding. And then I had a month until I saw my OB again to get my Nuva ring back. And we were like, well, let's just see. And then girl didn't even get a period. And we were pregnant right away. And so there's a lot that when I look back on this time, we were just so young and not physically, emotionally, mentally, spiritually, all of these things. We were just so young. And what we tried to do was just kind of like push through it. Like, as long as we love each other, we'll make it happen. But we didn't know what even to work on, like how to make it happen. So I have this conflicted part where, yes, I do grieve our marriage didn't get that time. And also our careers didn't either. Like, we're building our careers now in like our mid to late 30s. And we didn't get that time. And having our kids is what like catalyzed so much of this. It expedited our process. And so I'm so grateful for them. And yes, I have heard this, that you grow up with your firstborn and you raise any ones that come after that. And it's so fucking true. And so there's that part that, yeah, I really do grieve that part. And I'm so thankful for the way that this happened, because now that we've rewritten our marriage is 4 years old now at this point, younger than our youngest. And now our kids will age and we will still have us, and we will be younger when they're out of the home, and we will like have this really solid marriage to base on, versus once the kids leave and we look at each other and we're like, I don't even fucking know you. Like, we don't even like each other. I don't even know who you are anymore. What do we even talk about now that the kids aren't the center of our universe? So it's a funky dynamic, and I'm really so grateful for how everything happened. But so many things had to be like aligned so well for us.
I would venture to say that because you all were friends, that's how you survived this, right? Meaning the young part, because your friendship was foundational in it.
And we just get each other, and I've never had anyone see me in the way that he does. Like, you saw my hair is like super curly. I straightened it constantly. When we first met, we were friends. He was just like, why don't you wear it curly? Like, it's your hair, it's your curls, be who you are, you know? And then now I haven't straightened my hair in years.
I once had a blog, So How Do You Know? And I interviewed just a ton of couples, and one about how they met and when they proposed. But then I had three questions, like, what do you like most about them physically, mentally, and emotionally? And one of my favorite answers from a husband, and she's not traditionally beautiful either, which is why I like this even more. He said, I love when God made her, he had me in mind.
Pretty fucking sweet. And here's the thing. I hear those things, and we all, like anyone listening, hears these things. Yeah. And it's so fucking sweet and so pure. And then we kind of like force that on anyone. And anyone who has been like close to saying that to me, I will just fucking swoon.
Well, you know, here's the and thing,
it's so even, hard to find the authenticity.
Even if you don't have a man that says that, you can have someone who lives that. Yours does. He never said that to you, but he did say that to you.
Yeah.
He said, wear your hair the way you were born, which is, I love when God made her, he had me in mind. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. So that's the other part. Like, one of the dangers in social media is you are trying to do Build-A-Bear people. I want you to be my partner like this person's partner. It's like weird. It really is. So you can't even enjoy who you have because you want them to be this version of someone. And P.S. it is a version. Because you're seeing the edit reel, right? You're not seeing the whole marriage. You're just seeing whatever they posted.
Right. And that's what I think it is that I also married a man who was raised by women. Well, he was raised by his dad. Not the good parts for the most part, you know. And he was raised with a lot of sisters and older sisters who, one, fucked with him. And two, he got to watch how they were tolerating being treated. And so he got to see a lot of these things come through. And so some people don't quite get it with me and my husband. Like, I think they think like he would be different than he is. Because a lot of people expect me to be with like a darker Jewish man in the same way.
Are you Jewish?
Yeah.
Nice. That's why you were looking at me when I was talking about the So how do I say it? Mikvah. Thank you.
So, yeah, of course. And so there's that part that like, he wasn't born Jewish. He wasn't raised Jewish by any means. And he's also 6'3", white, blue-eyed, Irish, Scottish, Viking,
Anglo-Saxon white.
Yeah, like super white. Like, there's these parts that I think people might expect different. And since he found sobriety, or since he's been working in sobriety, he's like gone to his roots. So now he's like super punk. He has ears gauge. He has long hair. We shave the side of his head. He wears like pins and patches. He paints his nails.
Never seen any of that. Even I've never seen him, right? But the way you're describing him, I would have never picked that.
I know. And so
in my head.
People see him, and people that I like, my clients that I work with, they'll like run into us in public, or they'll see my private social media and like the profile photo, and they're like, oh,
hilarious.
Like, I did not see this coming. He's Lifetime Food and Beverage, managed music venues, just very punk. And in his sobriety, before that, not so much. He didn't know who he was.
You know? Good point.
So now, and people are seeing that, like, oh, this is not Leiden. Like, your husband, like, that's.
So tell me this, the person who he is, you love it more, or you're just tolerating it because you love him?
In the beginning, I didn't know. I didn't know whether this was a rebellion, an overcorrection from like staying within societal standards for so long, or if this is just truly who he is. At this point, it's who he is. And one, it works for me. It's very Sons of Anarchy, and I think it's second to tell. The other part is, he's being who the fuck he is. And he's expressing himself in a way that feels authentic. So yeah, he's being who he is. And he's being an authentic version of him that allows for him to know who he is, be proud of who he is, continue doing the work, and show up as the best possible husband and father as he possibly can be.
So let's flip for a minute and let me interview you for just a second.
Yeah.
You said you feel like your marriage is in two chapters, right?
Yeah.
So technically you've been married how long? Like literally?
On paper, 9 years.
9 years, and then 4. In the 4-year phase of your marriage, what is the biggest thing marriage taught you about you that you didn't know about you?
In like our healed era? Mm-hmm. Healing era? It's taught me that I used to do it in a way to define me. I used to want to be married to define, talk about my husband, I'm chosen, right? Like this was much more about like the ring. Now I wear this ring that we bought on Etsy. Like I don't even wear like my ring. It's not about that anymore. It's so different. And so now marriage has taught me the commitment, the seeing it through, and the way that we complement each other. That like he enriches my life. He benefits my life, and he doesn't define it. Like, I want him. I don't need a partner. But like, if I'm going to have a partner, I want it to be him.
Do you need him though? Need in the sense of, because that goes back to what we were, this culture. Like, I think a lot of times we use needy and need interchangeably, but I mean need in the sense of he's essential or necessary. Yeah.
Yes.
I want us to bring need back into the discourse and start using needy for what we're saying we don't need. Why would anybody want to be with you if you don't need them?
Even on
a friendship level, like, I want my friends to feel like I need them in the sense of you're essential to me.
Well, and
not
also
in the sense of
like,
I'm codependent for you.
I'm only benefiting from.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, I completely agree with that. Yeah, he is, the ring that we both do is from Ireland.
Forget the pressure to overhaul your life. The new year doesn't need a new you. It needs you. Grow Therapy helps you make meaningful change at your pace and on your time. Grow connects you with thousands of independent, licensed therapists across the U.S., offering both virtual and in-person sessions, nights and weekends. There are no subscriptions, no long-term commitments. You just pay per session. Grow accepts over 100 insurance plans, including Medicaid in some states. Sessions average about $21 with insurance, and some pay as little as $0, depending on their plan. Visit growtherapy.com/try now today to get started. That's growtherapy.com/try now. Availability and coverage vary by state and insurance plan.
And it's in Gaelic, and it means my soul's friend.
Nice.
And that's why it's just, he's home. Like, nice. He is just my dude. This is the man who, like, after each one of my pregnancies, my deliveries, my miscarriage, he, like, washed me. Like, he just, even through his drinking, even through all the lying, the deceit, and all of that shit that comes with addiction, he is so fucking good. He's a
wonderful human. Well, I can relate
human,
to that.
And, like, just,
of never being married, but last month was 10 years without my dad. My dad took his life 10 years ago, and we were close. A matter of fact, I'm wearing this shirt in honor of my dad and kind of despite my mom in a way. Gail Riddick's my mom and Mervyn Eugene Warren's my dad.
Wow.
They're divorced and she would have a fit because it's their marriage announcement.
I see
that
it.
I found on the internet.
Stop.
And part of the reason why I'm wearing it is because my grandfather, my dad, and his brother all have the same name because my grandfather wanted my dad to change his name. So this is one of the few documentations that his name is actually Mervyn. He went by Eugene all his life. So everything about this shirt is joy, 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 right?
Yeah.
But where I was going with that is my dad was an off and on substance abuser his entire life. A big part of it was his childhood and adult and adolescence and adult trauma.
Yeah.
But I often tell people, and I feel like you'll get this in a way a lot of people don't. I felt very loved by my dad. I didn't feel like my dad loved himself.
Right.
And I don't think we give substance abusers that voice. We feel like if they struggle, they don't know I love anybody. That's not true. My dad would take in stray pets and love them like, I felt adored by my dad, but I felt like it was almost like he didn't have enough for me and him because of the brokenness. But what he did have, he had for me for sure.
Yeah. It's like everyone else is worthy of love except for them.
Man. And isn't it hard to watch someone you love feel that way?
And here's the word, my codependency was like, why can you not fucking see this? Like, how can you not do this?
See
for yourself?
How amazing I see you. Yeah.
Yeah.
And, but that's love. That's what love is. I see how amazing you are.
And yes, yes. And this is where our crisis 4 years ago was my husband nearly took his own life. And I walked in and it was a whole thing, right? So it's this experience that one of my very good friends that unfortunately we're not quite close anymore, is they had said to me, how are you so okay with continuing your marriage with him when he nearly left you, when he nearly abandoned you? My response is, no, he didn't. He abandoned himself. This was him leaving himself, not leaving me. He stayed so that he wouldn't leave me and our kid, right? Like, there's that part that, like, had anything worked out differently, had I taken a different flight, had any of this been different, he would likely not be
here.
And he is, and I'm so endlessly grateful, but anyone who would think that that was him leaving me and leaving his kids is so fucking wrong. It was him not.
It takes a special person to understand pain, though, right? Like, another thing that people really need to consider is, for real, there are more interfaith marriages now than there's ever been. But if you're going to do that, be real clear you respect the other person's faith. Like, for real. Like, for real. Because part of the reason why people are asking you that is, I've never really struggled. I used to have suicidal ideations. There is science that says it can be in your DNA. My uncle, my mom's side committed suicide. An uncle on my dad's side committed suicide. My dad committed suicide. I also come from childhood abuse. So I see suicide differently than a lot of people would. So, like, for example, some people see it as a cowardly move. I see it as, number one, to decide to take your own life is a very bold and it takes a lot. 100%. But also, I don't think people get, and sometimes I wonder if it's because they choose not to get. People just want to end pain. Like, it's not taking your life so much as, I don't have the tools to end the pain, and I need this pain to stop. It's really, so it's like, when you see it through that lens, how is it that he wanted to leave you and his kids? It's, I'm just hurting this much. And when you love someone that well, you can see it that way.
Yeah.
So when people have said to me, like, how you feel about your dad? I was like, what I struggled with is, my dad didn't give me a formal goodbye. But we did spend the last year, because he died right a couple months before I turned 40. And I knew something was coming, because I kept saying, whatever you're about to do, because we had a very open, candid relationship. I said, can you at least wait till I turn 40? And he was just like, girl, whatever. But that last year of our life, I was able to ask, so why did you and my mom really divorce? So why didn't you come to my high school graduation, which had to do with these issues with my mom? So what really happened to you as a kid? So by the time I got the news of what happened, he did give me the gift of the information that I needed to kind of end the journey of all these suicides in my family. Because I'm kind of like, well, now that gives me the courage to push through, almost in honor of my dad.
Wow.
So, but it takes special people. So I salute you to see it through that lens.
I mean, it's also, he's still here, and I would hope that I could have still, had we lost him, had, you know, my kids not feel like their identity was defined by how they lost their father. Like, it was all of these fears, and that's where, like, my anger came from toward him, right? It wasn't for what he was suffering through. It wasn't for any of that. It was just more so of, like, what does this mean for our kids? And so I'm grateful that we're doing the work, and that I'm able to understand this in a completely new and different way. My uncle had committed suicide when he completed suicide when I was 10 or 11. And that was just like what I knew of suicide, right? It was this shock. It was this awe, and this entire family just fractured, right? We didn't have any sort of like understanding around that other than the way that we were affected by it. And so this kind of redefined that for me. And I've been able to view so many things so differently since my marriage was redefined in these ways, that before it was like infidelity and all of these things. It's like, it's a no-go. You end the marriage, you end the relationship. This is just what it is. And that's what everyone says until they're actually cheated on or whatever this is. My husband's addiction felt like infidelity. We're talking years of hiding receipts, going places 100%. That he's, right? Like, there was so much of that now I can see that so differently. And I have more understanding of a problematic dynamic versus one person being the problem and just how we contribute to it. But that's been a huge thing now that we talk about it often. Of course, I was getting treated afterward because it was terrifying for me. And every time he left the room, I was worried about hearing a gunshot, right? Like, these things were really fucked with me for a while. And it allowed for me to move through and also gain new confidence in myself and how I can tolerate these things.
You may not have meant it to translate this way, but I am going to roll it back a second. When I was talking about my dad and you said, paraphrasing, but yeah, the difference between you and I is like you've had to live through your dad completing that and I didn't. But do you get how much trust it takes for you? Like, really celebrate that. It takes a lot to trust that he won't. My journey's done. Like, you can't do it over again. So I just have to grieve it.
Yeah.
But you have to choose to trust every day. Like, we won't have to go through that again. Like, celebrate that. Because a lot of people would have left because they don't even have the strength to trust that we won't go through this again.
Yeah. I mean, well, thank you
for that. Yeah, but really, yeah. You know?
No, I appreciate it. And I hear it. And, you know, we talk about it often about certain things of, hey, like, tell me what he was thinking. Like, what was happening for him? And he says, like, I remember him. I don't align with him.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't understand him anymore. Mm-hmm. Right. Like, he just couldn't see what he couldn't see, you know? And so there's a lot there that, yeah, I mean, and that's where so much of this work has, I've healed so much of my codependency that not if he relapses in sobriety, when he does at some point, it's more likely that he will than he won't. Mm-hmm. When he does, it won't be my choice.
Yeah.
It's not, I can't do that for him.
Right.
If God forbid, that is the way that we ultimately lose him, I can't stop that. Right? Like, what he chooses to do is his choice, and I have to pull myself away from the responsibility of carrying that as if it were my decision.
And that goes back to my girlfriend with the affair, right?
Right.
That's his thing. I can love him through his thing, but I can't take on his thing. That's his thing.
Yeah.
For sure.
And I didn't know how to do that at first. At first I was like, was I not enough? Did I not love him? You know, like any of that shit, it did not last long.
Mm-hmm. Which is really another reason why I'm huge on, so I'm excited to find out you're Jewish because I was raised Seventh-day Adventist. I don't know if you know what that means, but like,
I don't know it.
So like, yeah. I keep the Sabbath, Friday sunset to Saturday sunset. I eat like a Jew. Yes. Yeah. I adore all things Hebrew culture. I just add Christ onto the story. You know what I'm saying?
Sure.
But Judaism, don't keep pagan holidays. I think Passover and Rosh Hashanah are a bomb. So I'm excited to. But that would go into another thing, like going back to the interfaith component. I remember interviewing a couple. They do Christmas Hanukkah.
Uh-huh.
And the wife, I'm trying to remember which one. It was her. The wife is Jewish, the husband's Christian. And I said, I don't even do Christmas. Christmas irks my soul. Like, because I like to study stuff. So I know about the winter solstice festival and the Christians just tag Christ on so they could put a tree up in the house. It's a wild story. So I was like, but you're Jewish. Like, how does that? And she said, everything about Christ and Christ being born, I'm not down with that, but I can get down with the peace and goodwill towards men. Sure. Like, I've just learned to find the good in it, right? Mm-hmm. But there are so many couples I've worked with, they, not just religion, they don't have the same values, period. They love each other, but they don't have the same value system. Yeah. There's a lot of men in my life, I love them. They're attractive, they're funny, they bring me so much joy. We do not complement each other. We couldn't do life together.
Yeah.
I think that's really important too, because again, we live in a very Disney fairy tale world where as long as I love you, let's get married. Please don't feel like as long as I love you and the sex is good, let's get married. Please don't.
Yeah.
Please don't.
No, it's a wild thing. So because my husband and I were friends first, he knew we had these conversations that I told him I'm never going to date a smoker again because I dated so many smokers. I was like, not fucking happening. And the other one was that it wasn't important to me to marry Jewish based on bloodline and how that goes, my kids are Jewish from me, right? There's that part that I need to raise them Jewish, not religiously Jewish. That's not important.
Culturally Jewish.
You mean spiritually, like culturally, the value systems, the customs, the sacrifices, right? Like holidays can't all be great and candy and presents, right? Like we're in the middle of Pesach right now, right? Like my kids are, I have matzah, gluten-free crackers right here with me, right? Like it's this part that it wasn't important to me to marry a Jewish man. It was important to me to raise Jewish men, raise Jewish families. And so my husband knew that. And he was brought up, he had a lot of like religious, not religious trauma growing up, but it just didn't align. There was a lot of guilt involved with it and all of that. And it just didn't appeal to him. And most of the close relationships he got where he was welcomed in, because his family was so fractured at that time, he was welcomed in by his Jewish friends. And so much of that, like when we were dating, he was working at a synagogue and, you know, doing security. And so that's kind of always aligned with him. And so we never did a formal conversion. We met with my rabbi, and he was basically like, unless you're going to live near a synagogue and practice and do all of these types of things, like very religiously, if you're Jewish in your heart, you're Jewish in my book, right? So we kind of, he wears a star with everything happening in the world. Like he is wearing stars everywhere. Like he's all about it. Whereas like mine are tucked in because I never know who I'm interviewing and how it's going to go. Yeah, there's a lot there. So our value systems are so deeply aligned because it's family, it's honesty, it's valuing each other, cherishing our families, right? Like,
The in-laws are still alive on both sides, the parents?
Both of us have lost our fathers.
Okay.
But his mom is Christian, very religious. Yeah.
Did you lose the dads when you were married or before that?
Before married, my husband and I were just friends when I lost my father. So he never got to meet him. And then I knew his father. He passed while we were living in Boston.
So what's the in-law dynamic been like? Because people really I don't agree with the saying personally, I married you, I didn't marry the family. I don't think you married the family, but I do think you're delusional if you don't think that family is not going to directly impact your marriage.
I didn't marry his family. I married into his family,
though. Yeah.
And that's a value system of mine, right? Like I want that relationship. So his birth mom is not in his life at all whatsoever by choice. His mom, who raised him, is his stepmom, and she's wonderful. We now just moved 2 hours away from her. She's phenomenal. I adore her. We get along so beautifully. She's Christian. I am not. So when he and I knew that we were going to be together, when I met her, I think the second time we ever met, I asked her, does it bother you that I'm Jewish? And she said, no, does it bother you that I'm not? And I said, no. And she just hugged me and said, thank you for helping him believe in something. She said she just needed him to believe in something bigger than himself. Yeah. So now, I mean, we are incredibly close. We actually moved here. We're living with my brother, my sister, and my brother-in-law.
Yeah, I remember
and
you their saying kids, that. Right? Remember, because so, I was like, amazing.
You're like, what's that like?
Amazing.
Yeah, but I mean, it's beautiful. We're so close. And the in-law, we don't have any issues. My family just said, he loves you. You love him. He treats you well. He values you. He cherishes you. You're obsessed with each other. Good. Like, that's really all that we need.
So, another interview question. And I ask my clients this a lot. As a wife, looking through the scope of being a wife and your husband, what is your favorite thing about both of you? What is the thing you wish both of you would work on? But separately. So I'm saying your favorite thing about you as a wife and what you want to work on, and then him.
Oh, yeah. My favorite thing about me as a wife is that I'm constantly iterating, right? Like I really do want to improve in every way that I can.
Nice.
What I could improve on is not making my identity a wife.
Fair.
Like being able to kind of keep that keep that a bit separate. My husband.
Or mom, because you've got so much to juggle. Or a mom.
Yeah, there's a lot. That's why my parental shift program is about people who are parenting. It's not about how to parent differently. It's about like how we can remember who parenting
is. Yeah, yeah. Who am I in the midst of the parenting?
No clue. For my husband, my favorite thing about him as a husband.
Yeah.
Oh, God. This man, he...
Look at your face. Look at your face. You love your husband.
I deeply adore
him. You adore him. Yeah, I can tell.
He's incredible. And he, nothing shocks him. Nothing phases him. This in the morning is like not great. You know, the girls are a mess. It's crazy. It's crazy. He's just like obsessed with me. Just like, loves me. I can't, nothing I say really throws him off.
But you know what? Beauty for ashes in the sense of, imagine how someone who's literally stared mortality in the face sees life now. Like it really is don't sweat the small stuff, right?
Yeah.
On a whole like 2.0 of it. So that definitely tracks that he would be like, there's bigger fish to fry than how you look in the morning. Or how are we going to raise these kids today? You know what I'm saying?
Right. And that's where, he is very much like that. Like when I'm not being super kind to myself at certain points about just my body image, things are squishy. Like things have changed. He's just like, look at what you were able to do. Right. Like I watched you push one out and get cut open for the second one. Like what your body has been through is incredible. Right. And there's just that like he's a man and like how he shows up for his family, how he loves his family, how much gentleness and nurturing and love and affection he can show his boys and how he can show that to other men too. It's incredible to me. Where he could benefit is improvement, I think, is just staying more mindful of himself and staying, just staying more mindful of how he presents and how sometimes his intention doesn't match the impact and how like he's a very passionate man and that borderline's aggressive when you're really sick
for
and you know, like it just comes through. But yeah, I mean, he's my dude. Yeah.
I see it. Let me see if I have another question. How has intimacy changed since your children?
Oh, God.
Not sex, intimacy. Yeah.
I didn't know the difference between the two for a really long time. I didn't understand. I kind of had this mindset of like, if men are cuddling with you, they just want sex. And I used to use sex as like a surrogate for love and attention. Right? So there's that part that I didn't know how quite to do. So... now it's much more, it's different. Like we've had so many conversations about what it means about sex and intimacy and closeness. We do the 6-second kiss daily. We make sure that like we're getting that when we walk past each other, we'll do like a brush against the shoulder or something, like just letting you know, I see you, I'm there with you, I'm here. And like, we're connected. So that's different. It's rough. It was rough for a really long time of how to do that. And now our intimacy is just very connected. Like we're very kissy, very lovey in front of our boys. We hold hands constantly. Like there's a lot, we dance in the living room. Like there's a lot of that stuff going on and it's really nice. And if we're not actively choosing to, then we lose it. And so and he's much more physical touch than I am. So there are times like even last night, I was kind of just like trying to clean up and tidy and I like to get shit done. And then like, then I can do other things. Like when I'm on a road trip, like I don't want to stop and have lunch, pick up Wendy's on the way. Let's just fucking get there. And I'm getting better with getting interrupted and
being in the moment and enjoying the moment.
It's harder for me to do those things. And that's what I'm working through. And so last night I was like in the middle of like carrying these things all around and he takes mornings, I take evenings. So like he was going to bed And he just like went like this and like opened his arms and was like, come here. And in my brain, I was like, ugh, ugh, like not now, you know? And then immediately that switched into like, it's going to take me 5 seconds to go and love on my husband and 100%. Like enrich our relationship. What, I'm going to take the trash out five then seconds later.
Then refuse him matter. And then it's issues later on.
Yeah. Exactly. And so like, that's what I'm really working through. And so then I just put down my stuff and just laid on him. We cuddled for a hot second, kiss up and get good sleep. I'm going to go listen to my podcast. Mm-hmm. Not mine, but like a podcast I'm listening to. Mm-hmm. And like, that is that. So this, it definitely ebbs and flows, but as long as he and I are focused on maintaining our emotional intimacy and still flirting and still being like cute and sexting fun stuff, like that keeps everything just so much easier.
Is sex a priority?
Yes. Now it is. Now it is. Now we're like just quickified because the house is, there's
well,
so
I mean, a quickie,
kids.
Whatever, but
yeah,
the connection is good. Like we figure out how to eat. And you know, the thing, it's funny, statistics say men and women, if it's 7 to 13 minutes, they're good. Women sometimes need a good 15 minutes to get warmed up, but the actual act. And I tell my clients often, you sit on Instagram for 2.5 hours, but you can't find 15 minutes to
sit
spread
on
it wide. Let's not do that.
Yeah, no.
It's not that you don't have time. It's that you're not prioritizing it.
Well, and I heard somebody say it's kind of like, well, I love Thai food. So the
like
description doesn't
too.
Quite work. It was basically like, I'm not crazy about Thai food. I wouldn't think to order it. But every time I'm eating it, I'm like, we should order this more often.
I mean,
and that's how they describe sex. I was like,
and something else that needs to be discussed a lot, because I don't think very typically, and I do poke the bear, and I will tiptoe out and say often, so how do y'all like to gaslight us into saying sex isn't a big deal when you're single, but then somebody cheats and you're ready to jump off a bridge? Is it a big deal or not?
Yes.
But because you kind of conditioned yourself, it's casual and it's on your terms, and then you take that stuff into your marriage, and you don't really see how sacred, how necessary, how good, how helpful it is. There's a scripture in the Bible that I really like, that I think everybody can get from it. It's 1 Corinthians 6:16, and the Message version starts out, there's more to sex than mere skin on skin. Sex is as much of a spiritual mystery as it is a physical fact. And when you know that mystery means revelations, I tell couples that often, especially since a lot of couples I work with are Christian, right? So they absorb it differently. But I think everybody can grasp the concept of you come with your partner and their spirit is a spiritual union. Like, quit letting how you dated with sex and played with sex prior to marriage. Don't bring that into your marriage. Like, it's 15 notches above whatever you were doing before. So
this
goodness.
Is a complete pivot, and I'm curious.
Look.
How do you feel about partners sharing their body count, their roster, how many people they've been with when they're together?
Have you ever heard of a complementarian before?
Uh-uh.
Are you a feminist? Would you consider yourself to be that?
Yes.
And I'm not. I'm a
not a weaponized feminist. Where
no,
like,
I get it. I
men.
Get it.
Like, yeah, I think we should be able to like do stuff for ourselves. Yeah.
I'm a complementarian. So complementarians believe we are equal in value, different in purpose. Right.
Oh, then I'm with you.
So yeah. It'd be the masculine, feminine balancing. That said, the thing that I think is funny about body count is I think it gets gaslit a lot too. So you want all this sexual freedom and sex isn't a big deal, but then when someone asks you how many people you've been with, now you feel uncomfortable to share it. Why? If it's not a big deal. I very freely share mine, 14. I'm okay. And nobody dies. Like, I think we've made this big stigma around it. I will say this, Time Magazine did an article, how your partners affect your offspring. You should read it.
What's the Cliff's Notes?
It literally alters your DNA, and it can affect the kind of kids you're going to have prior to if you didn't have all those partners. It's shifting sure. DNA. Yeah.
What does that look like if you had more than 14?
I mean, what does it look like if you had 3? Honestly,
yeah, I'm curious.
Thing. The body count, whoa, based on who you marry and based on how you see sex, some people are fine with 100. Some people aren't fine with 2.
Sure.
You know what I'm saying? But for me, I'm just kind of like, if I ever get married, I would hope that I have the kind of friendship that it wouldn't bother us to tell it. But I don't really need to know. Like, I don't need to know. But I also don't have a problem telling him. It's kind of like giving someone your passcode or your password.
Uh-huh.
You know what I'm saying? I like, yeah, if you want it, you can have it, but I don't really need it. Like, I chose you. Go get a test before we do it. But I will say this, though. I'm glad you brought it up. Countercultural. But it is a good idea that when you meet the one that you think you're going to marry, you all should consider a season of abstinence. Mm. Here's why. For the very reason you said about pregnancy. They do say that, okay, so a sexless marriage is considered 15 times or less a year. A healthy marriage is considered 4 times a month. So not necessarily ideally once a week, but we know how marriage is. Sometimes it may be 3 times in 1 week,
yeah,
not
cluster
for the rest of the month, but the key is prioritize 4 times a month. Hmm. The reason, okay, why I think a married couple should is because some people think marriage is just one long sex fest. I'm the one that says, no, you should prioritize it. It needs to be way up there, too. Top, yeah, 5. But there are seasons. Somebody's traveling. Somebody's pregnant. Somebody's sick. If you didn't do a season of abstinence before you got married, you're going to have a way harder time dealing with it in marriage.
That is
That's
a
why I think
valid
it's a good
point.
Idea.
That is huge.
I think it's a good idea.
I do, too. You know, there was... What I typically, whenever I'm working with couples, I don't fully go into sex lives. We talk about it, of course, within the people who become parents and like long-term marriages, we go into it. And what is, I think, so important too, is just being comfortable with yourself, with your body and their body too.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
Like my husband and I, when we first got together, because it was so overnight and, you know, all of this, we actively chose not to have sex for the first like 3 months.
Hmm.
We did everything but in like the weirdest fun kinky shit ever. We got super comfortable like engaging in certain ways, mm-hmm, together without actually physically having sex, and that gave us so much more room to be comfortable to engage in certain things and like allow for it to be like, okay, well, that's where you're like with my husband and certain things. Often I'm like, hey, like, I'm not really up for sex, but like, you want to wink? I'll give you content.
Mm.
And like, we'll just kind of do this kind of stuff where we can like masturbate together. We can like do these things together. If one of us is like wanting that and the other one's just like a whole production, mm-hmm, like I'm good without it, you know, like that it allows for so much more comfortability so that sex in your own marriage doesn't become a taboo subject.
Yeah.
We're indeed not allowed to talk about what we like, what we don't like, how this works, what this is. And there has to be like some level of comfort either with you and yourself and your body and or like with them, but hopefully preferably.
Well,
with
this
your
is
own.
Why, again, I'm a complementarian. So this is an anti-feminist statement, but I tell men often, you better ask her if she likes sex. Who cares if she's good at it? A lot of women that are good at it weaponize it.
Yeah.
So even if the girl is green and she doesn't give head as great as you like, y'all have time to learn. But when people have sex for the joy of sex for themselves, you're going to win every time. Yeah. Somebody that's skilled, you might be in for a ride.
Yeah. No, I it's phenomenal advice. I do think that that is. And some men just don't care.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And if that's the case, then like we need to just make that known from the get.
Agreed.
Yeah.
A lot of, I mean, I tell people often, if you don't know the purpose of something, you'll abuse it. Marriage, sex, relationships, people, it doesn't matter. You got to know what the purpose is for them being in your life to be able to treat them well. That's just the truth. And I will say this as we're winding up. If you are engaged, 40% of people do not have sex on their wedding night, and I think that's horrifying. Because I'm word specific. And so consummate means complete. So when you complete, well, I'm sure you know this because I know back in the day, is it Orthodox Jews who would do this? This was way back in the day. But like at the reception, it's like they wait. Mm-hmm. Somebody got to put something in something before we do anything. Because mm-hmm. you're consummating. It's not.
Right. Like it's not, you're not starting a marriage unless the marriage starts by this way.
Yeah. So how do y'all have time to take pictures of everybody and dance to every song? And then you're too tired. And it starts to show how you're going to prioritize it. I get tired, but nobody said you got to have movie sex. But somebody put something in something. Consummate the day, complete it, because it will put you in the habit of prioritizing it.
I love that advice. We did not. Because, well, we did the next morning. But the night of, I'm a night person. He's a morning person. He's up at butt crack of dawn, just wide awake. And I'm like, don't talk to me for 4 to 7 hours after we wake. Like, this doesn't work for me. And again, back then, drinking was part of our personality. Mm-hmm. It was just like what we did. So yeah, he went to sleep. I stayed up with friends, partying and like
doing the whole thing. People aren't taught this kind of stuff either. You can't feel bad for what you didn't know. We don't teach this stuff.
Just no. And so I just like wore my wedding dress, couldn't get out of it because I couldn't unzip it, and like ate cake in bed before I passed out. And then in the morning,
you know, it's funny, but y'all had set, you lived together, right? So y'all had sex before marriage. I tell people all the time, you can usually tell when people had sex for marriage because they're shutting that reception down. If they did not have sex for marriage, they got to go.
They have somewhere to be.
They got
that they've never been before. Yeah.
And I'm not just saying virgins, because some people have plenty of sex and then they meet their partner and they're like, let's wait. But those people, they're not staying with you. Like, one of my girlfriends, she got married, and they were, like, throwing the thing, cutting the cake. It was, like, all at once. We were like, damn, girl, relax. No, she's ready to go. Like,
I have somewhere to be. I've been waiting a while.
Yep.
Amazing. Shelly R. Warren. We opened this up so differently than we closed it. I am so grateful for you. I love this conversation.
I enjoyed
it. I would love to have more where, like, we're still, like, dabbling and, like, seeing where the boundaries lie in all of this. I love this, and I love you so much. Thank you so much for being here. Tell me, anyone listening, where they can get like all of you.
I don't do social media. Get the books on Amazon. So look, Inside of Me, Lessons of Lust, Love, and Redemption is my firstborn. It's my sexual autobiography. It came out the same month that Bill Clinton's autobiography did. Do with that what you will.
And the second book,
Pure Heart, was a part of a trilogy. I used to tour with an organization, got people out of porn, and it was a ride. We touched on that before because I told you I came to Vegas about that. Porn is definitely a layered subject. I'll just say this. I don't call them porn stars. I call them porn actors because oftentimes that's what they're doing. So however you're processing the porn you're watching, you'd be amazed behind the scenes how much anger there can be, how much just, wounded. So if you're learning about sex from porn, at the very least, consider finding some balance. I'll leave it at that. Mm-hmm. And then Inside of Me 2.0 is a play on the fact that the book is 20 years later from the first book and then kind of an upgrade. I thought it was going to be talking a lot about sex, but I actually had way more sex in my 20s than I have since my 20s. So it's really more about family boundaries, spiritual narcissism. I like the Bible a lot. Christians wear me out, but I like the Bible a lot. And so I don't like saying I'm not religious, I'm spiritual, because there's a scripture, James 1:27, that says true religion's taking care of widows, orphans, and not letting the world taint you. So that's how the Bible defines religion. What we're seeing is something else, right?
Yeah.
But it does touch on spiritual narcissism, and that's a very real thing. Religion can screw you up.
Yeah.
And you can find me at MISSNO SIPHO at Gmail. And for everybody, it's like, Shelly, my family lives in South Africa. Nosipo, Miss Nosipo is the email. But my mom's husband gave me a Zulu name. Here's your cultural lesson for the day. Zulus were the only tribe that was not enslaved. It means from the heavens. And Nosipo means God's blessing to those she's around. And I just think that's dope. So I just kept the email address. Why don't you do social media? Life is just more peaceful. I get why social media is needed. But I went on a Facebook, and I had a ball on my Facebook page. This is how long ago I was on social media, Facebook. And I had a page where I would just post stuff, and I had a rule that I never deleted comments. So we would go in on, I was like, here's the topic for the day, and we're talking all day. But I went on a fast and just never came back.
Wow.
And have not missed it, not one bit. I tiptoe out there sometimes, and I'm like, y'all are some wild.
It is a wild time to be out here. It's atrocious.
And the way that people so confidently speak opinions as if they're data and research and facts, it's just making up stats. 90% of women do this, 85% of men do that.
It's ridiculous. My son was just, they were doing the curriculum for him in second grade about opinion versus fact. It was like, a lot of people did not get this lesson or need
they
be,
don't.
Like, brushed up.
They don't.
It's wild.
We speak very confidently and don't know what the hell we're talking about. So that's how you find me. And I'm so glad I met you. And I love your husband for you. Like,
thank you.
Good stuff. Good stuff.
Me too. Thank you so much. And Miss Nosipo, that description, entirely accurate. You embody the fuck out of it.
Thank you.
And I just adore
you.
I'm so happy to have had you.
Because I trust you saying that. Because I don't, I'm not big on flattery. I'm sure that's not a shock to you. Mm-hmm. So I feel like that's genuine. Thank you.
Yeah, I have no reason to say it unless I
actually Right. And I feel like you're my sister. Like, I told you I love Hebrew culture. So, beautiful.
You probably know more about it than I do, to be honest.
You know what's so funny? My landlords are Jewish. And they were talking to me one Friday. And I said, it's the Sabbath. And they were like, you keep the Sabbath? We don't keep the Sabbath. I was like, I do.
But I'm like, it's kind of like people who get their citizenship are better Americans than I am. Like, know more American history. It's just like that. My husband teaches me so much. He's like, hey, did you know this? I was reading.
Yeah, exactly. Like,
sure don't.
I'll tell you this, and I'm not saying it in a patronizing way, but your culture is beautiful.
Thank you.
What I'm saying? It is. It's rich and it's beautiful. I tease Christians all the time. I don't know how y'all have a problem with Jews when everybody in the Bible was a Jew, but okay. That's also another lesson for another time.
Yeah. It is a wild thing. Like, I did not wear a star or anything before October 7 and all this hatred came out of the world. Mm. And now, I went from telling my husband we need to take down our mezuzahs, our kids need to stop wearing their stars, not wear this, because I'm also the granddaughter of a Holocaust survivor.
Oh, okay, got it.
On that side, and then my dad was born in Jerusalem in 1944, so like there's a lot happening there, and so there's a lot of that. And now it's like, oh no, I'm wearing Chamsa, I'm wearing a Chai, a Star of David, like she's everywhere. I've never been more Jewish. We're doing Shabbat week Fridays. Shabbat dinner ceremony, everything every Friday. Like, they created so many more Jews.
That's what's
just
amazing.
By trying to hate on us.
We, as a Black person, we have more similarities than not, but you get that, you know? Because even when I watch, like, the same way you feel is the way I feel, like, the whitewashing of the Bible. Like, how are they white people when it's Lebanon and Syria and Egypt? But y'all act like you're teaching Black people about the Bible. Girl, we could do this all day.
I would love to. Separately. Like, this is a conversation I've been wanting to have with somebody who is knowledgeable of the other faiths in a way that I am not, and probably my own in a way that I am not. And I would love to have more of a conversation.
Your culture is phenomenal.
There's so much to it. And, you know, if we weren't controlling the weather and stuff, maybe people could appreciate it.
If y'all didn't hate Christ so much, even though Christ
I know, right? Yeah. It's just thank you for laughing about this with me. I have had many a comments be just dropped and like
And I'm like, okay, never mind. We won't be
making humor. Because of where you come from, I say it often, the West perverts everything. There's a purity in a lot of the East when it comes to a lot of things. Mm-hmm. That you come over to the West and you're just getting gaslit all the time. Mm-hmm. Gaslit about Judaism, gaslit about African culture, just gaslit all over the place. Just gaslit.
Constantly. And you know, and I will end it with this. My kids, for Thanksgiving in schools, they're still teaching them that same shit. That same shit.
Columbus
but
Day,
we will talk about other cultures and how they like, yeah, they sat down for a fucking picnic. Like, it is a wild, wild thing that we shit on so many other countries for like not telling historical accuracy. And yet we're indoctrinating our kids to not know the truth of how this country came to be.
Well, they're doing it in real time. You know, like they removed Harriet Tubman and said it was a white black collaborative, that the Underground Railroad was a white collaborative. We wouldn't have needed the damn railroad if it weren't for slavery. Like, what are we doing?
That's how it was. And then they're like, you're welcome. We catalyzed.
Yeah. It's just like, no, we forced you here, but thank us for setting you free. Like, it's amazing. It's really wild because, again, my godchildren are 13 and 13 and 5. They'll be 14 and 6, but in June. And I'm a June baby, too, so they're my baby.
Me, too.
Are you? What are you?
20.
June 17, Gemini.
Ooh. Gemini.
But the thing that we were talking about is because my godchildren are bi-ethnic. Their mother's black, their dad's white, but their mom is black. And we were like, we have got to pull every black book we can find. Can you imagine that we're now where you've got to pull every Jewish book you can find, and we got to pull every black book we can find because they're about to get rid of all the Jewish and black books. That's where we are. In this day and time, that's where we are.
It's atrocious.
Got to preserve the culture of your own kids. In a country that was supposed to be okay. Yeah, we could talk about that all day, but we're.
I want to, and yes, we would literally be here all day. I am so grateful to you. I am tethered with you, and I am coming to Nashville as soon as I possibly.
And I'm so proud of you. I'm proud of your marriage. I like when people are in healthy marriages. Like, I know you were being candid in your story. But you have nothing to be trepidatious about, you know? Nothing you said to me sounded dysfunctional. It sounded like two people that were committed. And I'm proud of you for that. Everybody's commitment journey is different. But anytime people can survive divorce court, I'm overjoyed about it.
Yeah,
so,
I mean, it's...
Mazel tov, really.
Yeah, I mean, we didn't get to divorce court. But yes, I mean, it's... We were...
A lot of people are, but you quit doing that. A lot of people are, but they didn't.
I know.
You know, there's people that get up every day want to get a divorce and don't because they find something that keeps them. And I salute it. We don't do our kids like that. We're not like, and they get on our nerves too.
I know. I have to like make these corrections because if it doesn't like quite fall within that accuracy box, then it's hard for like, I'm a very concrete thinker and my background is forensic psychology. So it's like as concrete as psychology can get based on the law and what this is. It's like, I'm very that. Thank you for calling me in on that.
I mean, come on.
Another thing I'm working
on. Love your husband. Y'all are still married. Mazel tov. That's the end of the story.
Yeah.
Till next time, my dear.
Yes.
Bye.
You be well.